VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. Turkish President Recep Erdogan renews his threat to block the NATO membership bids of Sweden and Finland less than a month after dropping his opposition to them joining the U.S.-led defense alliance of which Turkey is a member. On the eve of a summit with Russia and Iran, Erdogan said Turkey was still prepared to freeze the process of the two Nordic countries joining NATO if they did not meet Ankara's conditions to act against Kurdish militants living within their borders. The Turkish leader warned Sweden particularly that it does not have a good image. Erdogan, who has attempted to play peacemaker between Russia and the West, has blown hot and cold on the Nordic states' NATO ambitions, which Russia fiercely opposes. On Tuesday, he will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Tehran. One topic on the agenda, discussing ways of resuming grain exports from Ukrainian ports that have been blockaded by Russian forces. Meantime, on the battlefield in the war in Ukraine, Russian shelling destroys a two-story building, killing six people in the town of Turetsk in the eastern region of Donetsk. Ukrainian emergency services say the city lies some 50 kilometers south of Kramatorsk, one of the last Ukrainian-controlled towns in the industrial heartland of Donbas. After failing to capture the capital Kyiv early in the invasion, Russian forces turned their attention to Donbas. And EU foreign ministers meet to discuss imposing more sanctions on Russia, including the possibility of banning gold purchases from the country. The EU has so far approved six packages of sanctions on Russia. For more on these stories, please visit us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Sri Lanka's acting president said on Monday that the country had almost concluded negotiations with the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, a day after he declared a state of emergency in the island nation. His office said in a statement, the acting president further explained that negotiations with the IMF were nearing conclusion and discussions for assistance with foreign countries were also progressing. The country has been rocked by protests over devastating economic conditions. In the U.S., a prosecutor arguing for the death penalty denounced the unspeakable murders of 17 people at a Florida high school as the sentencing trial began Monday for the troubled young man who admitted to carrying out the 2018 shooting. Nicholas Cruz pleaded guilty in October to 17 counts of murder and 17 counts of attempted murder for the attack at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. A jury is set to decide whether the 23-year-old should receive the death penalty or a life sentence for what the lead prosecutor called a cold, calculated, manipulative, and deadly massacre. The trial in the Florida city of Fort Lauderdale is a rare instance of a mass shooter facing a jury, as they often either take their own lives or are killed by police. The death penalty requires an unanimous decision by the jury. Cruz will otherwise be handed life without parole. The Florida shooting stunned a country accustomed to gun violence and sparked new efforts, led by students from the school itself, to get lawmakers to pass tougher gun control laws. President Joe Biden signed a gun safety bill into federal law in June. It included enhanced background checks for younger buyers and federal cash for states introducing red flag laws that allow courts to temporarily remove weapons from people who are considered a threat. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen on Monday said the European Union is seeking to double gas imports from Azerbaijan as it looks for non-Russian suppliers after Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Natural gas supplies have emerged as a weapon between Russia and Europe since Moscow's February 24th invasion of Ukraine. Von der Leyen said on Twitter, the EU is turning to more reliable energy suppliers. Today, I'm in Azerbaijan to sign a new agreement. Our goal is double the gas delivery from Azerbaijan to the EU in a few years. For more on these and other stories we're covering, please visit us at voanews.com. Reporting via remote, I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News. We'll be right back.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's a testimony that all those who are not willing to surrender are going to face our forces of law and order.
That was Chamberlain Ntu Ndong, a government official in Cameroon, on displaying the corpse of a separatist leader in towns and villages to deter the rebels and warn youth against joining their cause. Details coming up. Also, a plane carrying 36 passengers crashes at Mogadishu Airport, but all survive. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Kenyan presidential candidate Raila Odinga says he hopes Kenya's upcoming general elections will be free and fair to avoid a repeat of post-election violence witnessed in past election cycles. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports for VOA.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi on Monday, Odinga said the country's pause come at a time when the world is facing global challenges.
We are in a very challenging period in this country. We are going to have general elections in just 21 days from today. This is happening at a time when the global crisis. We've got a war in Ukraine, which is having telling effect. Here in Kenya, we are feeling the impact of this war.
He expressed confidence that his alliance will win the election. Odinga and his running mate, Martha Karua, will be facing off with Deputy President William Ruto in the polls on August the 9th. On relations between Kenya and war-torn Somalia, Odinga promised to establish cordial relations between the two countries if elected.
Trying to establish a relationship with Somalia. The new president of Somalia was here 2 days ago. I had a meeting with him. And he gave an assurance that when we come to power, we will continue with the work we have negotiated with President Uhuru Kenyatta to try to restore peace between us and Somalia. We had problems with the previous regime. Now the current regime seems to be more user-friendly.
His running mate, Martha Karua, says another priority will be fighting graft.
I think the first step in tackling corruption is stating our intentions clearly, which we have done, matching our words with our actions, which will then convince the people that we are serious about it, and will inspire the people in turn to join the war against corruption.
Since naming Karua as his running mate, Odinga has led opinion polls against his top rival contender, Ruto. The 77-year-old Odinga is making his fifth run for the presidency. He has the backing of the incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta, once his bitter rival. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
In recent years, a growing number of traditional miners have flocked to the Sudanese village of Banat, hoping to strike it rich. But the miners leave behind hazardous white powdered waste laden with toxic chemicals, including mercury, used in the gold extraction process. The waste is dumped near farmland, water sources, and residential areas, posing clear health dangers to nearby residents. Mercury damages the nervous, digestive, and immune systems and can be fatal. It also threatens the development of children in the womb, according to the World Health Organization. Community leader Algeli Abdelaziz said the problems began 5 years ago with stillbirths and birth defects, including blindness and brain damage. Sudan is one of the world's poorest countries, and gold mining remains a source of fast profits, attracting many. The African Development Bank, AFDB, agreed last week to help Zimbabwe clear its $13.5 billion debt during a visit by the Abidjan-based lender's president. The FDB the AFDB has also started releasing loans from a $1.5 billion fund to help Africa avert a looming food crisis fueled by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe is one of 38 countries set to benefit from the bank's fund, which is known as the African Emergency Food Production Facility.
African Development Bank, or AFDB President Akinwumi Adesina, said during his visit that Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa had sought his assistance for Zimbabwe to clear its external debt, which started accumulating after the late Robert Mugabe's administration defaulted.
I believe that Zimbabweans, ordinary Zimbabweans, have suffered long enough. You have a country, a beautiful country, in which you now have 40% of the population that is living in extreme poverty, and they do not have the resources to get out of that. So we have to create a new hope, a new pathway, so that tomorrow can be a better day than yesterday. Zimbabwe has a significant amount of debt arrears that it needs to clear. But you cannot run up a hill if you carry a backpack of sand. And so Zimbabwe cannot run up a hill for its economic recovery and growth and prosperity if it's carrying a backpack of sand.
AFDB and Zimbabwe are looking for ways Harare can get access to international financial money while the debt is being settled over a long period. Mutuli Ncube is Zimbabwe's finance minister.
What we've done so far is to begin token payments for the African Development Bank and the World Bank, a European Investment Bank, and also all the 17 Paris Club partners. But what needs to be done is really to implement the full roadmap for arrears clearance. Now, but for this to work well, for us to be successful, we need a champion. And I'm pleased to say that Dr. Adesina has agreed to be a champion, to cajole all partners around the world, within Zimbabwe and everywhere, for us to be able to implement our arrears clearance strategy.
Gift Mgano, an economics professor at Durban University of Technology, says the post-Mugabe government is still reckless and careless, and so the AFDB will not be able to satisfy the world on a plan to clear Zimbabwe's arrears.
In 4 years, our debt has doubled. Doubled because we were borrowing money recklessly, doubling because we created a new debt through the White Farmer Compensation Deed. There's also a component of debt which we don't know where it is coming from, because the Minister of Finance is not going to Parliament at each and every point in time when he assumes new debt. And if government is going to clear the debt, first they must stop increasing the debt.
During his visit to Zimbabwe, AFDB President Adesina said his organization was filling a food security gap of 30 million metric tons caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. That will come through the African Emergency Food Production Facility fund worth $1.5 billion.
It will support Africa to produce 38 million metric tons of food with a value of $12 billion. Wheat, corn, maize. It'll include 6 million metric tons of rice, and it will include 2.5 million metric tons of soybeans. So we are very sensitive to this. Africa has no business going around with bowls in hand to beg for food. Africa has a business, and must be in the business, of putting seed in the ground and producing its own food, and making sure that it can unlock the tremendous amount of agricultural potential that it has. But we can't eat potential. We got to unlock the potential of agriculture.
Africa, Adesina said, imports mainly wheat and corn from Ukraine and Russia, as well as 2 million metric tons of fertilizers. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
A number of civil society groups in Botswana and Zimbabwe say they will assist scores of Zimbabwean migrants in the diaspora to return home and cast their votes in next year's general election. Most of the migrants are undocumented and say they do not have funds to travel back home. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mukandisi Dube has the details.
With a general election due to be held in Zimbabwe next year, most migrants staying in Botswana want to return home and cast their vote. But during a meeting in Habrone this week, the migrants told a civic society group, the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, that they are not able to travel due to lack of funds and most are not documented. The organization's director, Blessing Vava, says the Zimbabweans expressed their desire for assistance to travel home.
But more importantly, there was something that came out of that meeting, which it was a consensus that Zimbabweans that are here, they are eager to go back to Zimbabwe and vote. And the kind of assistance that they would need, it's the movement. They highlighted that previously, I think it was the election that happened in 2008, yes. There were some initiatives also through our compatriots to ensure that a majority of us who are here were able to go to Zimbabwe and exercise their democratic right.
Madise Mapanyane of the Botswana Civil Society Solidarity Coalition for Zimbabwe says they've previously assisted Zimbabwean migrants during election time.
I see now that the developments are asking for reconnection with the like-minded organizations in the region and to stand by them and ask for the real empowerment of citizens of Southern Africa. We want a Southern Africa that we cares for us, a Southern Africa that loves its people, not the one that kills its people, the one that keeps its people hungry.
Alice Mukwe is the director of Botswana human rights organization Ditswanelo. She says it is time civil society groups got together to help the migrants return home and vote.
Bokiskos was actively involved, working together with colleagues in Zimbabwe to assist and enable and facilitate Zimbabweans to prepare for participating in their elections. It's very clear that there is a call for that kind of support again for the next elections. And we are committed to joining hands with Crisis and other colleagues to see to what extent we'd be able to assist in a similar fashion.
An estimated 3 million Zimbabwean migrants live in neighboring Botswana and South Africa. The majority were forced to leave their homeland due to deteriorating economic conditions. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
Cameroonian authorities have been displaying the corpse of a separatist leader in towns and villages to deter the rebels and warn youth against joining their cause. Cameroon's military says last week it killed Lucky Aka Oliver, who was wanted for working with rebel groups in neighboring Nigeria to kill civilians, commit beheadings, and burn hundreds of public buildings. Mukki Edwin Kendeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Agriculture Minister Gabriel Mbairobe says floods and elephants have devastated several hundred hectares of farmland, poultry farms and crops, and killed an unknown number of cattle, sheep and goats within the past 6 months.
Il y a eu des attaques de chenilles légionnaires qui ont dévasté les récoltes.
Mbairobe also says devastating migratory caterpillars, crickets and weaver birds have disseminated thousands of hectares of farmland in Cameroon, especially on the border with Chad and Nigeria. He says close to 300,000 people find themselves in extreme or emergency food insufficiency situations, and 2.6 million people are not certain they will have a meal each day. He says food insecurity is threatening the lives of 6 million Cameroonians. Speaking in Yaoundé on Monday during a crisis meeting, Mbairobe said most poor civilians threatened by food insecurity find it difficult to cope with rising prices caused by Russia's war in Ukraine. The Cameroonian government blames the war for a 15 to 30% increase in the price of staple food items, especially wheat, maize, sorghum and rice, widely consumed in areas along the northern border with Nigeria and Chad. Cameroon relies on Ukraine for 60% of its wheat imports. The war has caused the price of a 50-kilogram bag of wheat to climb from $35 to $60, an amount the government says a majority of the hungry people cannot afford. Ephraim Chi owns a maize plantation in Pus, a town on the border with Chad. He says unpredictable weather conditions and changing climate patterns make it difficult for farmers to know when to plant.
At times, it will go for a long time without rains, and at times, the rains will come intense. So farmers are now confused when to actually plant their crops, and that is why we have a lot of poor yields now. People are cutting a lot of trees, and these trees regulate the climate. When the soil is so dry, because we've cut down a lot of trees, the catchments dry up.
Chi blamed civilians for cutting down trees for firewood and logging companies for what he said is their attitude to destroy the environment. Cameroonian officials say more than 40,000 people, a majority of them cattle ranchers, farmers and fishers, are still planning to return to the border region despite fleeing December 2021 bloody clashes over water resources. The government has not said how much it needs to reduce the food crisis, but that it is in negotiations with funding agencies and friendly countries. Last week, Japan's government donated $1.2 million to the World Food Program to assist vulnerable persons, including those threatened by hunger in Cameroon, Chad, and the Central African Republic. In a food analysis back in April, the World Food Program said staple food prices, early depletion of household food stocks, and declining incomes from reduced crop sales limit food access for poor Cameroonian households amid low levels of humanitarian assistance. The report says the ongoing Boko Haram insurgency in northern Cameroon and clashes between government forces and separatist fighters in the northwest and southwest regions continue to negatively affect the livelihoods of populations and drive high numbers of acutely food insecure persons. The separatists are seeking to carve out an independent English-speaking region from the rest of the French-speaking country. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, America. I'm Yehye Suhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Somali authorities say an aircraft carrying 36 passengers and crew crashed at Mogadishu Airport Monday, but all on board survived. Mohamed Desen reports from Mogadishu, Somali.
The Juba Airways plane was carrying civilian passengers from the southwestern city of Baidoa when it crashed at Mogadishu's Adenade International Airport on Monday. Ahmed Mualim, Somalia's civil aviation director, who spoke to VOA by phone, said the plane crashed around 11 a.m. local time while landing at the airport. According to eyewitnesses at the airport, the plane descended too early before the runway, flipped upon the touch on the ground, and landed upside down. Witnesses told VOA that the plane caught on fire and saw firefighters battling to put out the flames. Despite the crash and the fire, Mualim says all 36 people on board survived the crash and that only 3 people sustained minor injuries. Authorities have not determined why the plane crashed. Mohamed Dyson for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
A new United Nations report says African countries must diversify exports if they are to survive economic shocks. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
A report by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, calls on African countries to broaden their exports beyond commodities if they are to escape poverty. UNCTAD's Economic Development in Africa report for 2022 says that global crises, including the COVID-19 pandemic and Ukraine war, threaten African countries' economies. It says millions of Africans already struggle to make a living in the middle of a rapidly rising food and energy crisis. UN economists say Africa will not get out of its poverty trap if the continent remains dependent on exports of primary products, mainly in the agricultural, mining, and extractive industries. They note commodities still account for more than 60% of total merchandise exports in 45 of Africa's 54 countries. UNCTAD Secretary General Rebecca Grinspan says one out of two Africans, more than 600 million people, are severely vulnerable to food, energy, and finance shocks. She says Africa must diversify its economy to become more resilient.
The report makes clear the great potential for African countries to transform their economies through services, supporting the continent's long-standing economic diversification goals, boosting productivity and development.
UNCTAD says knowledge-intensive services such as information and communication technology, or ICT, and financial services could be a game-changer for Africa. However, they note the sector currently accounts for only 20% of the continent's services exports. Grinspan says traditional services such as travel and transport dominate, accounting for about two-thirds of the total services trade.
The analysis we're sharing today provides convincing evidence that high-value services, especially high-intensity ones in ICT and finance, are often the missing link that explain why diversification has not been achieved in the continent.
Grinspan says economic diversification should be a priority in Africa. She says it is the only path to sustainable growth and to high-quality jobs for young people. The UNCTAD report calls on African countries to implement policies to better link trade and high-value services with other sectors, especially manufacturing. It also calls for removal of protectionist measures that limit the development of high-value added services trade. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdulrahman, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.